Here we go.
We are back. Yeah. Welcome back to Standby Podcast with JJ and me, Francisco Ramos. And we have a very special guest today. We have my good friend Fahim Anwar.
Hey, good to be here. Yeehaw. Good to be here, guys. Thank you.
Fahim. This is your camera right there.
Camera one or camera two? What are we calling it?
All cameras are one here.
Okay, that's what we got there.
But Fahim, you know Fahim because he's, you got a lot of credits, but you had you have one special that you shot for CISO.
Yes, if anyone remembers what CISO was.
CISO, remember
I call
that?
It Peacock 1.0. Right. You know, they really learned their lessons from CISO and then fucking hit it out of the park with Peacock. You know, everyone's talking about Peacock.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the streets, people are like, Peacock. And they're like, net what?
Yeah. I got a tattoo
it's all about Peacock.
Yeah.
So CISO was kind of like them getting their legs.
The
you
beta
have
version.
CISO merch?
I have a CISO hoodie.
You have a CISO hoodie? Which now it's cool.
It's cool now.
There was
a period where...
When it came out, it wasn't.
Yeah, it's like enough time has passed and it's not around anymore where it's kind of a throwback and it's ironic.
And you can build the story of CISO. Don't you know about CISO? They dominated the landscape.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, so... And also you're a writer in the CBS show. I forget the name.
This is United States of Al.
United States of Al.
It was two seasons. It's not on anymore.
Oh, it's not on.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm giving you all the credits.
And you did Conan, and that's not on the air anymore. Is that correct? And you were in a sketch thing with Bill Burr, but that was on Quibi, and that's not around anymore.
After high school, you worked as...
Isn't that funny, though, as comics? Like, we have credits when we get brought up and all that, and then... But the thing is, time moves on, and then sometimes shows aren't around anymore. So the goal is to have credits for things that are still in the air.
Still on. Or that were popular enough that people still remember.
Yes.
You know, where you're like, hey, you know, like I say Shameless, you know, and people still go like,
it's still
okay.
A big show. People binge it.
Luckily, see, my credits are from Britain and Australia, so they're vague enough that nobody questions them.
They go, that's a thing.
Yeah, Channel 4?
They just go, BBC. Okay, that's
cool. Yeah, BBC, Channel 4, Channel 5. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll just have to believe it.
Yeah, it's like you don't want to. You may recognize them from the Late Late Show at Craig Kilborn. You know what I mean?
Yeah. At that point, you just go like, just say Late Late Show. It's just who cares?
Just
who
say,
that's right. Keep it more vague as time goes on.
The Vegas is clubs and colleges all over. Like anybody cares about colleges anymore?
Yeah. And who's going? Yeah, or is a favorite here?
Yeah,
you get that one. It's like
I prefer that instead of like clubs and colleges all over. Like, ooh, baby plays clubs and colleges all over. He's not a local guy. He does all over.
Yeah. But speaking of, but you are in touring right now, actually.
I am now. Yeah,
not can't, yeah.
So
like
I am all over.
I am all over. So
but just clubs, not colleges.
Right.
And you have any dates that you want to pitch?
Once this come out, I don't know. Well,
probably come like next week or something.
Okay, probably Minneapolis then. So Detroit this coming weekend, and then Minneapolis after that. And then I have a slew of dates after. Just my website is the best place to see.
I'm Fahim Anwar.
Yeah, FahimAnwar.com.
Nice.
Yeah, you're on the road a little bit, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm also going to be in, well, if we want to talk about it, I'm going to be in. Well,
that's your roundabout way. You're like, I guess I have dates too. I will be at.
What anyone has it. So this Saturday, October 1st at Flappers, I'm going to be headlining with Carlos Santos, co-headlining. We're doing a show that we do on the road here. And also next week, I'm going to be in Vegas, October 3rd to the 9th. I'm going to be headlining there for my first time. And then Brad Garrett joins in. Well, it's his club, so it's like he can do whatever he wants.
That's pretty cool.
But he's joining in.
You're going to let him join.
You pat him on the back. You're like, Brad, why don't you sit this one out? I'm going to go long.
And then you're all gonna be in New York.
I'm in New York this weekend at Caroline's on Broadway.
Oh, nice.
Wow. Have you done that club?
I haven't.
No, me neither. Yeah. I mean, I did like one spot, but I haven't like.
That's excited.
In Times Square.
Okay.
I'm excited. Like I said last week, it's really weird because this is my first time in New York, even in the state
ever.
Of New York, even in the state of New York, no, under my own name because I've done Carnegie Hall and Madison Square Garden with Jim Jeffries, but I've never. Nobody knows your name when you open for Jim Jeffries either. You're just that guy who was on first.
When you open like that, there's people with like big gulps just like hearing your comedy while going to their seat.
Yeah.
Pardon me.
You have to learn all those tricks. Like, come on in, 7 p.m., just a suggestion.
Yeah,
have a seat.
Yeah. You gotta like slowly, because they're climbing in. It's like going to a concert and are you going to go see the band, the warm up band or not? You know what I mean?
Some people exactly. do want to see the whole show. Yes, exactly. Some people are like, parking was tough. I just want to not miss the main act. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's bound to be a good chunk of people that are still in the bar and they're looking at the thing. Yeah. Now there's some guy on. It's not Jim yet.
So you've been there, but now you're going to be by yourself.
So, yeah, this is, yeah. So I'm pretty excited about That's it. Cool. To get stuck into New York in that fashion. Yeah.
We want to, as you know, this is Standby Podcast. So just basically we talk about travel and the arts, but we can talk about whatever.
Well, we are hitting it off on the right tone because if we're all on the road coming up. How are you guys finding it? Are you finding the audiences are still learning how to be an audience again in some venues sometimes?
I think they're back to normal. I don't see any differences now from the pandemic era. You know what I mean?
Everyone has slipped back into the way it was.
And I don't see any other weird, I can't talk about this, I can't talk about that kind of stuff, you know?
Okay, then that brings me to question number two. How do you find, what's the lifespan of your COVID material? Is it done already?
Oh, no, it's done.
It's done,
I mean, sometimes I talk about, remember back in the...
remember back a year ago?
I mean, if it's stuff that's, if I'm going to mention it, it's going to be stuff that's, I'm going to talk about something else that has nothing to do with COVID. Health or something. I'm going to talk about, I used to be and then I, but
right,
now...
you got to make an inventive segue to get to that.
Yeah, but now I feel I don't know. I don't know. Are you still doing?
I feel like you can touch it and you don't want to dwell on it.
So long.
You don't want to have a 15-minute COVID chunk.
People
don't have the patience for that.
Exactly.
But I think you can visit anything. You know what I mean? If you have the right joke for it.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. Because it's it is a big event. It's not like you can go it never happened, you know? But I feel you can just talk about it for 30 minutes.
That would be funny. I would just love to do that. Just almost Andy Kaufman type prank, just to do an entire 45 to an hour on COVID. Just to burn an audience.
And just typical COVID, the ones is so hey, COVID-19, what about COVID-20? You know,
what happened to 1, 2, 3? I didn't hear about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way up to 18.
Starting with 19? All the 2021 references.
What's with this thing with masks? Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I wore a Bob Dole mask. Apparently that wasn't the one that they wanted me to wear at the clinic.
Shit, I gotta write some new material by next week.
A scream mask, is that okay?
And so now you're now you're touring more, right? Because this is a thing that you weren't touring as much before, right?
Yeah. I think also just sort of to support the hour that came out, you know? So I put the new special, I did, you mentioned the Cecil one.
And
then this time around.
This
new one I did, because the landscape changed so much, everything is so segmented and no one really watches anything unless it's on Netflix. Even Netflix is getting super saturated.
Exactly, yeah.
And YouTube has become this viable pipe for stand-up fans and stand-up comedians to release their stuff and actually, because we just care about viewership
exactly.
at this point.
And to your fans, straight to your fans.
Yeah,
you know
can be surgical because when you release it on HBO, you have to hope that people have HBO, that they'll find it, that they remember if you're a nobody, do I type his name in the thing? It's just there's a lot of friction between your stand-up and art and the people. But YouTube algorithms are pretty sophisticated, and now it's become more of a thing with Joe List and Mark Normand and Sam Morril and Schultz and Stav. So it's become and Giannis.
Yeah.
It's becoming more
and
of a thing. yeah, the Greek freak. He does comedy now.
Did you see his special?
His special is just I'm not a freak, and he's just really... You think that he likes that name, but he's stop, cut it out, guys.
Yeah.
I know I'm good at basketball, but I'm a human being.
Yeah. That's why they didn't repeat. He was spending too much time concentrating on his stand-up act.
That is true. That's that's actually, I think that's the new thing now. I mean, not the new thing, that's the present. I mean, I feel which is good because now you have more of you can just go straight to your consumer or straight to your fans.
Yeah.
So you don't have to,
I mean, you've been in the biz for a long time, and I think we're kind of kindred spirits in just that we are a club rat. We just work on our stand-up, and we've been doing it for so long and for so many years, and there's just so much fuckery going on in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
You don't fit whatever.
Yeah,
diversity
well, it's like what you
checkbox.
Mentioned. When was it that you mentioned something about? JFL.
JFL.
That you mentioned something in. I don't know if it's your podcast or another podcast that you were talking about. How people it's they go like you were saying, go to the clubs. Like if you're an industry, just go see what, and then ask the bookers and ask the other comics that are famous. It's like, hey, who are the people that are not that famous but are good? What do you recommend? You know. And then that's the way like, to look at...
Ask Sebastian. Ask Bobby Lee. Yeah. Ask Tom Segura. Or go to the clubs. Yeah. Ask the bookers. Because like we know.
Of course.
We're in the scene.
Yes.
We know the names you hear about. Mm-hmm. We see every night.
Yeah.
It's like tennis. Like where they are
exactly.
on the leaderboard.
Like, like the ranking of like... And that's the thing, which is also because then when you see that things get booked or you see like who got... something and then you go like, I never heard of
I've
this
never, yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
a lot of them are like, I'm
God
like,
bless them and that's great
and
they
that's,
get that opportunity.
Yeah.
But it's like...
Like, where are they?
Where are they?
Yes, because like, and sometimes I have that there conversation with my fiancé. She's like, when, you know, she meets somebody and they're like, oh, and they tell them, oh, they also do comedy. And I was like, what's her name? And I'm like, yeah, I never heard of it. I mean, I'm like, because now everybody can say I do comedy just because you just did one spot, produce shows.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not,
unfortunately,
you know,
it's not a label you have to earn. Yeah. You can just
say like
a
homeless guy can say I'm doing comedy tomorrow and we have the same title.
Yeah,
it's,
exactly.
It's not like we went.
And that's what happened here at when I was doing open mics. Uh-huh. That was literally what it was. It was just half, you know, homeless people and half, you know, people like that were trying to do comedy. And but yeah, we were all the same.
Yes.
At that point, it's like,
yeah.
And then sometimes they were killing the homeless guy. And then you're like,
he goes, and then the homeless guy ended up to be, and it's like some huge name.
Yeah.
They almost need a guild that can hand down permission to use the label.
I wish there was, you know, or something, because it's like, it is the only thing that people go like, it's so hard to do. But then I think I can do it. It's like, what? Like,
you know, I always had this analogy. I think most people think they can do stand-up because you can't see the work on the comedian's body. When you see Aaron Darnold, is it Aaron Darnold? I'm like bad at the Rams. If you see like like a crazy yoked football player, you're like, okay, I know I can't.
I thought you were talking about like in the comic. I was like,
oh,
who's
Aaron
Darnold?
I mean, so
Aaron Darnold.
Yeah. Okay. So you see him,
so
you go, I can't do, like,
of course,
I can
I
see the work.
See, yes.
I can see the work on his body.
And I can, you could never go like, yeah, I'm going to do that. No, there's no way that you could just jump in right away
but
and do that.
When you see Burr, he just looks like a regular guy.
Exactly.
But, like, he has all the muscles
exactly.
in his brain.
Exactly.
So it's like hidden reps.
And because you see it so, you know, people like Burr, they're so easy, like... It's so natural. Like, it looks like they're not trying. And then people go like, I guess it's easy.
No, you're going to do. You're just going to ramble.
Yeah. Well, because everyone has made people laugh. But conversationally funny is very different than stage.
Oh, for
pay
sure.
$25, $40, got a babysitter, 2-drink minimum funny.
Yeah.
And all eyes are like.
Exactly.
This isn't your friend at the water cooler who's giving you tons of goodwill.
Yeah.
Make me laugh, motherfucker.
Yeah. I paid for this.
I paid for this.
And I don't know you, so hurry up because you got to like.
I'm paying a 13-year-old $40 an hour so me and my wife can be out.
Or even that classic, I had a friend from college come, he came and visited me one time at a gig and we're backstage and he goes, I never thought you'd be the stand-up comedian. I'm the one who knew all the Mike Myers quotes and I'm the one who knew the
And that's all you were doing on stage?
That's
Ace Ventura. You just go through all of them?
People go like, hey JJ, can you do that behave again?
I don't know.
But that was his idea.
You guys remember Ace Ventura? And then he starts talking out of his ass. Madison Square Garden.
It's like,
that doesn't seem derivative at all. You're a legend.
Yeah. But the execution is phenomenal. I remember those movies. And then you go, that's what she said. And drop the mic. And everyone's like, oh my God. He knows all the catchphrases.
And his friend is going like, I used to do that.
I used to do that better.
That was my bit.
But speaking of that, because... So how did you start? Because you were, you also came, I mean, I think we're very similar that you also, you know, worked in an office, went to school and like, but like, were you always funny? Like, were you always like, because you were talking about people that are like, oh, I'm funny, but I'm like, but how did you know like, hey, I'm funny, I'm funnier than the norm. You know what I mean? When you go meet like, I'm funnier than, because my first thing when I first did an improv class the first time and I went did it in DC and I was like, yeah, I'm better than this. And it wasn't like an arrogant thing.
No.
It was
not
at all. It was my first time I was better at everything than anybody else, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, that didn't sound arrogant at all.
No, no, man. No.
He's just perceptive, man. You need to be perceptive as a comedian.
No, but you have to be. But that happened.
Your instincts were kicking in, and you're like, oh, I think I've it's easy. I've got a level. Like, here
that, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think that's true with like any field that you excel in. You sort of, there's a moment where you.
But you're just, like, ooh, I'm there. Yeah.
Yeah, or like we wouldn't get into it unless we thought we had an aptitude for it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think growing up, I would tell stories and stuff. I would have friends in that school lunches.
Yeah.
I would just kind of recognize this thing where I was making the table laugh.
Yeah.
Different than other people would make. I guess it was almost like a very early form of stand-up.
Like they were paying more attention to you.
Yeah, or I'd be telling a story and maybe I'm acting it out. And just it's very organic and natural. And my friends in the lunch table is laughing pretty hard. And even, I guess, class clown, or I would say things, or I'd be kind of quick in class. And I would, maybe the teacher would say something and then I would say something and it wouldn't be disruptive. Like it would be clever enough where the teacher would enjoy
even go
it.
Like, as, oh, that's even funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Too,
yeah. It
you,
wasn't like
you
that.
You did feel like a bit of a class clown though,
a little bit, but a respectful one because I was a good student. So I wasn't just trying to go for
you
laugh.
Weren't like dressed up like in clown, like real like.
No, but you know, I would almost have grudges with other class clowns because there would be like a jock class clown.
You're like
one.
Judging them?
For real,
like,
for real.
You didn't hit
jock. What's a jock class clown?
Okay, so there's different styles of comedy, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I would do it in a way where
I would pick my you know, well, that's the thing. Timing is so important.
Timing,
so
like, and if the joke is so perfect and then the teacher is enjoying it and like, it's not disruptive with class.
Did they go like this? Fahim, just be quiet, you know, but like they're laughing. Is that how they would do it like that?
I don't, it was never like reprimand. I never got in trouble.
Yeah.
So I was able to like fly under the wire with that stuff and the teacher was on board with it. And it was, I wasn't doing it all the time.
Yeah.
But then there would be some kind of like jock. I remember there's one, I forget his name, but like he just in the middle of class, I think it was Spanish class.
Was he trading his popularity for a laugh?
It was kind of one of that thing too, where okay, he's like on the football team and like he's just so he's like he's just lifting this desk like in the middle of class. And I'm like, oh, that's just kind of slapstick.
That's not funny,
Or I'm like, mine was better.
Yeah.
Mine was like a word.
He's
doing physical comedy in the... Right.
But were people laughing at his thing because they were afraid of him?
No, it's one of those popular things.
Yeah,
though.
He's popular,
you know.
So like,
oh, God, I got it.
Yeah. Same way the guys who own boats are hilarious to some women.
Boats? Well, because they want to be on the boat.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, you know that old saying.
Yeah.
She wanted to date somebody funny, but what she didn't tell me was that she thinks guys who own boats are hilarious.
So it was the lunch table, and then it was, also I would notice I would make adults laugh, kind of, when I was hanging out with my friend's parents or something, you know, at their house, and like at dinner or something.
Like, how old were you at that point? Like, when you were making adults?
Maybe like 12 or 13.
So you were like, hey, Bob, is that your wife? And like, stuff like that. Well, <I'm> not...
You got him roasting.
Yeah, I'm not roasting the parents. Yeah.
Hey, the old ball and change, Bob.
Just he gets blacklisted from family barbecues
and you're like
by the age
smoking
of 14.
A cigarette.
Yeah. I'm just like Rickles and I'm 12 or 13.
What do we got going on here, Mom?
So I think noticing my friends laughing and then occasionally adults laughing too. It's like, okay, this is.
And at that point, were you a fan of comedy growing up? Or like, because I wouldn't even know about stand up until I basically started doing it.
Yeah.
Like, I never saw it or, like, wasn't a thing of, like, oh, I'm a fan of this.
I agree. Stand-up didn't really land on my radar until I saw Delirious and I was maybe 17 or 18.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, my comedy knowledge was all SNL. I loved SNL. Yeah. I loved Late Night Conan. I loved Simpsons.
Oh, yeah.
Simpsons is my first teacher. Because I watched that from such an early age.
Yeah.
And looking back on it, it's crazy to think how many comedy titans were writers on that show?
Of course, yeah. You see, like, I mean, yeah, you like Conan was one of
them. Dana Gould.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Just so many great comedy minds, and it's a cartoon.
Yeah.
Just I think about, oh, what a great teacher.
Yeah. That's great. And then because you lived in Seattle, you grew up in Seattle.
Yeah.
You were born there.
Yeah.
And then that's when you. Because in terms of moving...
Yeah, because there's a really good comedy scene in Seattle, isn't there?
You started there?
I started there.
You started there.
So I'm so fortunate that I got to start in a city where there was plenty of stage time.
Yeah.
Sometimes I hear about people starting in L.A., and I don't know how they do it.
You're putting their names in buckets and...
Yeah, because it's hard to even get enough stage time to get good, to even know what you are, at least in a secondary market. Because Seattle's not super small, but it's not super big. It's kind of this middle, it's like a Boston or a, even Boston maybe a little more elevated, or San Francisco or San Diego, just a big enough city where there's enough stage time and you can get good, at least know what your comedy bones and DNA is, and then move for the, let me pursue this.
Of course.
How long did it take you to get to that level where you're like, okay, now I need to go to the bigger city?
I did it in 4 years. I think some people who are scratching.
Like college.
Yeah. Well, because I did it throughout college. That was pretty much the timeline. I graduated. Okay. And then...
And you were doing it pretty much every day?
Not every day, because I was doing college. Yeah. So I would do it on the weekends, Friday and Saturday.
But you were doing already shows or just open mics?
At the beginning, open mics. And then you kind of climb the ranks. And then you get on some book shows. Mm-hmm. And then they ask you to do the weekend. I would feature on the weekends.
Okay.
And then maybe in year three?
Yeah.
Year three or four, then headline just locally.
Yeah. Nice. And then... Because we come, I guess, also we're very similar, I guess, in terms of like how we were raised or backgrounds. Like when you told your parents or did you, or like what did they, because my thing was like when I told them I was moved there, they went like, okay, you know, which to me was like, that was like being going like, go get it, son. You're going to.
Oh my God.
That was like huge.
Like an immigrant saying, okay.
Yeah.
That's go get him, Tiger. We believe in you wholeheartedly.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's like
apathy? I would. Oh my God. That would.
The fact, because to me, I was going to be like, what are you crazy? You don't know.
You were ready to fight?
Yeah.
I'm going to LA and I'm going to be a comedian. Okay. Okay. I'm going to get string cheese. Does anybody want that?
Exactly. Wow. That's what it was. That's so for you, like, how would I, like...
I got the fight that you won.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's the one I was training for.
The fight that you've been training for, I got to have that one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. I got to have the 17-year-old, you don't understand me!
Really?
I didn't yell like that.
What did they want from you?
Like, be a doctor.
Then you're an engineer.
It's always doctor.
I know. They would say doctor and lawyer.
But was it because you were, when was the first fight? When you were like still in high school or something? Or was it?
My parents were very supportive of like me doing talent shows and
because
like
they thought
soccer.
It was gonna be like a thing.
Me being in drama, they just thought it was enrichment and building blocks
for a good doctor.
Yeah, you'd be a doctor who was in a play.
Patch Adams.
Yeah. Maybe I can use some of that theatrical knowledge to heal my patients.
Oh wow.
Or maybe if you know I lost a patient and I need to get if I'm not feeling the real emotion to draw upon my Meisner.
You're gonna have the best bedside
and
manner.
Say, we tried. We did everything we could. That'd be a good thing, just like a doctor's sociopath and doesn't have human emotion.
But he has his classes.
But he goes to classes just so he can break news to patients.
It's just, I just need...
I kill a lot of patients on accident. I'm not a very good doctor. And they can tell that I'm not very emotional when I tell the family that I've lost them. So
wait, give me a go. Let's see how you do it with that. All right.
So I tried everything I could, and he lost a lot of blood, and he's not around anymore.
That'll be $250,000.
And then honk your nose. That's it. Patch Adams.
Yeah,
that was an abrupt.
They think I'm too blasé when I do it. I always think about, you know, how everyone knows to wash their hands before surgery.
Yeah.
So what was the day? Like, the last patient to die from them not knowing that, to me, is so funny. Like, we lost your husband. We did everything we could. And apparently, I don't know, washing our hands actually would have... We didn't know that till today. So if I had just washed my hands before I operated on your husband, he'd still be around.
So they'd be like, he actually was a good... He actually helped... He's going to help more people live because...
Because we figured it out when we were operating on him.
He's a martyr.
So his death isn't in vain. But isn't that bonkers? There's like microbes on our hands. Who knew? Anyway.
Sounds like the perfect time to share that with the victim's family. We've had a break
from
everybody.
How crazy is that just to think many people would have been saved if we knew to wash our hands?
It's the first thing everybody did something. You know, the first time they like somebody was trying to have a baby. You know, imagine they're like some doctor back in like in the Middle Ages or I don't know, caveman going like hitting the baby or something. It's like, oh.
They thought roundhouse kicking is how you induce labor.
Yeah, or something like that. Or like, you know, there's a lot of...
Just push.
Just like doing like the Heimlich maneuver, you know, because they think they get, I don't know.
You bear hug them from behind.
Yeah.
Squeeze it out. like a ketchup bottle.
Yeah, so they weren't.
Which they had in the Middle Ages, by
yes,
the way.
Of course.
I'm watching the new Game of Thrones. There's a lot of brutal childbirth scenes.
All right.
It's like, how many episodes in? It's like, just, yeah, there's been three so far. Oh, just right. A woman in bed, like, like, is this the show from
yeah.
the, I mean,
yeah,
it's a good
one,
show.
The new one.
The new one, yeah.
Which is what? Is that the after
it's
or before?
It's a prequel.
Oh, it's a prequel. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't dipped into it yet. I can't invest
I'm a fan.
In this world yet until I find out if it's a success.
That's a good, yeah. That's what happens when you're older. You go, okay, I don't have time. Is it good? All right. I mean, you let everybody else burn their lives and you go, is it good? Then I'll binge it.
Yeah, then I'll be on board.
In the plane.
Yeah, I'm going to keep a skeptical distance.
That's pretty funny, like a hierarchy of, I want to on a plane.
Yeah.
Is it home worthy?
Well, that's what it, like, yeah. Actually, like, I think it was someone with my fiancée about some movie, and I forget which one it was, but she's like, yeah, I'll watch it, but not to go to theaters. Like, you know, like, maybe in the here. You know, like, that's what has changed. Like, yeah. Which ones are you going to...
There should be a movie review show, kind of like Siskel or Roger. What is it? Siskel
Roger
and
Ebert.
Roger and Ebert now. Where they review the movie and they go, watch it on the toilet. I didn't watch this one on an iPhone. Taking
toilet,
a dump.
Yeah. The star ranking
this
system,
one's
yeah.
not bad. I would watch it on a plane. Yeah. This one's definitely train material.
I'll give it two toilets.
I'd give it two flushes.
Top Gun Maverick is IMAX.
Wash your... yeah. Oh, shit.
That's a theater. Did you see that one?
Yeah.
That's great. That's good. I know the other day I was in the plane and I was...
Oh, you watched it on a plane for the full 4D experience?
No, I already watched it, like, there was another lady next to me watching it. You know when you're watching and you start watching their stuff?
All the time.
And then they go, like... I was like, oh, sorry.
Dan, did you go? It's not as good. It's better in theaters. You're missing out. Yeah.
No, but he was like, but then I watched it and he's like, that's a, like, I was just trying to watch it again to see like the formula of how they became so successful of having, and it's kind of like, yeah, they just, they put every song that you knew that makes you connect to that movie, like right in the beginning, like, and like, and right away. And then it's like, you're already going like, okay, no, okay. Like, and it's like, and then it's just perfect. Like the characters, the thing, you know, it's a great movie. I like Tom Cruise.
Yeah. I'm a fan too.
Sorry.
I like how he's just going to kill himself for entertainment. He'd be 80 years old.
Yeah.
Doing
he's
going
to do, he's probably going to like a Jimmy. What's it called? Not Jimmy. Knievel.
Evil Knievel?
Evil Knievel.
You think he's going to Knievel himself?
I think so.
Well, what about when his alien god comes and picks him up, though? We've only got until he gets picked up in the spaceship.
What if he does, man? You know?
That'd be awesome. Imagine if that happened.
That would be the ultimate
at a premiere,
goodbye.
He just gets in a spaceship and leaves.
Yeah, the greatest, like, the greatest
right,
movie star that the world ever sees, and he just
imagine that he like
birthday and says
that's
goodbye.
His final thing of like destroying the like not the, but disrupting the world, because he does that, then it's like everything that you believed in the world is like,
oh yeah,
it's different now.
He's in a tux, he's on the red carpet, and he's like, I hope you enjoyed my movies. And then he gets in a spaceship and leaves. And then everyone on the red carpet is just contemplating life and everything that they thought was true.
Like, holy shit. It was real.
What a beautiful farewell. What? I hope you enjoyed my film.
Travolta tries to get on the ship behind him, and he's like, no.
You're not on the list.
Yeah, it's like Men in Black. No, but I wanted to go back to your parents.
Yeah.
So what happened? So you told them when? When did you came out to your parents that you wanted to be
there were phases, you know? I think...
You were hinting, you're like...
I had a microphone for, like, I was eating my waffles. My mom made waffles, and I go... Hey, you guys are a beautiful crowd. Thanks for these waffles.
Hey, what's the deal with the pants?
What's the deal?
What about pants?
With tiny squares. Why can't they be tiny triangles? What's your name, Miv?
Did I leave a notebook out?
Uh-huh. Oh, are we out of pancake mix? Yeah, they were fine with everything until I graduated high school. And then I just continued. I started going to the comedy clubs that summer. Because I had the summer off, and I would go to the Comedy Underground in Seattle, Giggles by the university. Mm-hmm. So I would do these open mics. And then that's when it tweaked on them that, okay, he's doing more than what was just in school. Yeah. And then they became concerned. And once it became kind of apparent that I'm pursuing this,
yeah,
It was kind of
okay, intervention time.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like I was doing heroin or something. I swear to God, you guys laugh,
like, but
it was the same DEFCON 5, all hands on deck. We're losing him.
Oh God!
Just me doing stand up. So I would come home from the clubs. And this is
they're
back
in dark and eternal.
Kind of. Well, because I would come home. I would come.
Waiting in the seat.
Yeah.
Like, where were you?
Like, my dad would already be in bed. And also, my dad would. He would, like, blow up every 2 or 3 months. And we would kind of, like, you're throwing your life away, blah, blah, blah. What are you doing? And, you know, people should be entertaining you. You shouldn't be entertaining them. It's like very low class.
Yeah.
Oh. Like stand up comedy is very low class.
Because that's a very, it reminds me of my family, that whole thing of like, if like, yeah, that's a very.
You're like a clown.
Like or, a clown. Yeah. You're not seen as that. Because over there, it's like, yeah, you got to be a doctor or be working in an office or be a lawyer. That's a class. It's a status thing. Like being that is kind of like, nah, you're just.
Yeah,
like
they don't have a rich stand up comedy culture in Afghanistan and these other countries. That is such.
And also, it's not seen as a career.
It's like, not seen as a career.
Like, how do you make money?
No, I think that's like, just really interesting because I haven't heard Americans talk of the class system before. Because in Britain, very class systems very always comes into conversations and stuff. But here in America, I don't hear it as much.
What do they call people that are poor or low class in Britain?
Well, there's a lot of names for it. But
well, what is it?
What, like lower class, do you mean? Like lower class people?
Is there like a name? Like a nickname? Schemies?
People who live in housing schemes? Schemies? Just like the accents change in Britain, there's a different term for
people. Well, that's in Latin America too. Like, there's a high class people, they talk, and they all talk the same way. They're like, hola, ¿cómo estás? That's everybody. It doesn't matter, like, it's funny because the accent changes from country, but it's the same, like, rhythm of, like, ¿en serio? ¿Cómo estás? Like that. That's like this. It's like, it's just, yeah, that's
universal.
It's universal.
Just
like,
going up.
Like Valley. Rich Valley girl, okay, I guess, here. Okay, you know, like, oh my God, like, what? Like, you know, that's kind of like the same.
That's funny how that's just universal.
But that's like the. So your parents are, you keep.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's low class, and I think they're thinking about, I think Afghan culture, Middle Eastern, South Asian culture, it's very much, they don't have the mantra of, I'm going to do me, who cares if people, what people think?
It's almost
number one thing in representing the family.
Mm-hmm. The name.
And I think my dad and my mom at the time was just kind of thinking about like, okay, when people hear that your son does stand-up comedy,
what am I gonna
maybe
say?
It's a reflection on my parenting. That's a weird thing. Why is he doing it? Maybe it makes us look bad. I'm just trying to put myself in there.
Yeah, no.
That's probably what was going on.
Of course,
And then the secondary thing of that, which is he's throwing his life away. He's like, we came to this country. He's going to be a clown. How can he make money?
Yeah.
But the thing is, I was still getting an engineering degree.
Yeah.
Right. But that didn't really... I told him, I go, I'm still getting my degree. I'm still getting good grades. And this is just something I do on the side.
Yeah.
But I think they were worried...
Right.
That I was
very like, and that's the thing, is worry. I mean, I understand because my I had also a conversation with my dad too when I moved here and phone things like, this is what I'm doing, you know, same thing, like, kind of like, it's tough. I'm doing that, you know, but it's all because they're scared that you're going to throw your life
away.
Yes. They don't really, I think like now I realize they don't really care what you do. You know, they just want
successful.
They just don't want you to like suffer, you know, like, and that's pretty much it.
I know what I mean, older now and. Easier to see now that it was rooted in wanting the best for me, but at the time it felt
did they do anything like ask you not to use their name, last name, or anything like that?
Yeah, just at least have a stage name, like at least Earthquake. Nobody knows who is.
Nobody knows.
I go, how do you know? How do you know Earthquake?
So what would
they call anything like that?
He's like, I follow his. I like Earthquake. My dad, like, I'm a huge Earthquake fan.
What would you be your stage name, like Earthquake? But like, what would you be like?
Oh, just like another natural disaster. I'd be Hurricane.
Hurricane.
After a punchline, I would just like spin around.
Wait, is that like Earthquake does?
No, but that's my twist on it. You like twist?
Twister.
Or maybe I'm Tornado.
Yeah.
After my jokes, I go... and do one spin.
Then we would all understand your parents' concern. Yeah.
How can you make money doing this?
But now, and now, obviously, like, now that you're successful, and like, what do they go like, I was wrong? Or like, do they go, do they admit anything? Because I think that's a very hard parent thing to say.
Yeah, it usually sticks around for years, doesn't it? Like, when you're going to come home and go back to school.
No, but he's like, but I'm talking about now that he's like, obviously established, successful. Like, do they go like, yeah, I guess I was wrong.
I think there's a tears.
Think ever admit it.
I know, that's the thing. And I know that too. And I don't need that. Yeah. I think some people, it's interesting culturally, you know, I think some people, I will generalize and say sometimes like white people will have this like fantasy of like the parent saying, I'm so sorry for what I did. Yeah, and this and whole, like a friend or something. Yeah. Whereas I think immigrants see parents as like deities almost. Like I love, my parents weren't right for what they did. Yeah. I understand what it's rooted in, but I don't need them to apologize for that. Like, because I understand them. I love them. I know they love me.
Of course.
And I could tell from the behavior just how things are great. And I don't need to have this fantasy moment where I'm sitting across from them and I'm like, you hurt me really bad. Yeah. When I was 17 and 18, that hurt me. Yeah. And how does that make you feel?
Yeah, like, no.
I
think that's the worst thing you can do to any immigrant parents. I mean, because they'd be like, because they don't like to talk about feelings, especially when I think that generation, they grew up into like, kind of like, it's about hard work. It's about being successful. So it's not a thin feelings. And so it's like, if you tell, like, if I would tell my mom, like, my mom, same thing. Like, it's like, I tell him, like, my mom, like, I'm like, if I joke with my mom, how come you never told me you love me? She'd be like, what do you, and she'd be like, well, and she couldn't process. And I know she does, but it's like, it's just the way that she was raised.
Yes.
So she's not going to say that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and it's like, we don't say that. You know it is, but we don't say that, you know?
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing I've noticed. So things are fine now, and like, you know, I mentioned when I was 17, 18, that's when it was kind of my mom and dad very concerned. And then my mom kind of came over to my side with, it took less successes for her. I think I was doing that Whiskey Tango Foxtrot movie with Tina Fey, and I took her to the premiere. Oh. So,
and then she's
that'll
like,
win her over.
That won her over.
Like, okay, I get his good, yeah.
Because it snapped her out of, like, you see this person that you see on TV, and then you see the red carpet, then you're like, oh, this is a real thing that he has done. It's not some fantasy.
And
like,
also
I'm seeing
shows
results.
You to like, wow, he's talented. He's not some person that's like,
yeah.
Because I think that's another thing too, that they're also afraid. I mean, I could see that as a parent too. Like, if I have a son or a daughter or whatever, and they want to just do anything, but then if they're not good, that's a tough one to be like, yeah. I mean, I want to, but you're not like, because I remember, like, for example,
it
like
helps
with
to
my,
see the approval of the public,
of course,
yeah. And then you're like, okay,
it's a nice milestone for them to recognize and go, okay,
yeah.
And then my dad kind of came over pretty recently, only recently, after I got the writing job of all things, because I was making a lot of money.
That's a corporate job.
I swear to
like
God,
office thing. It's like, wait, you're going to an office?
There's
to
a break room.
Okay.
There's a water cooler?
Yeah, then we're good.
Okay, I can rest easy.
You have a parking spot? Okay, good.
Because honestly, it mimicked Boeing so much that he understood it.
And he understands that world. He understands that world.
Yeah, I told him I have a parking space that's like right out front of
you
the
thing. You have health insurance.
I have health insurance.
And he's like, give it to me. Like,
how close
he
is the spot?
He was listening.
What's your out-of-pocket maximum?
I got, wait, not the doctor. Not the doctor. God.
Dental? Oh, give me a minute. He understood that.
Yeah.
So
that's cool. Yeah. No, I mean, I get it. It's like, which is funny because that's such a, I think, I don't know how you, because your parents were very supportive with you.
Yeah, but my father was military.
What's that like?
I have different. My father's military, so my dad didn't tell me that he loved me a lot. He was a gruff military guy.
What if we all just start breaking down crying? These are just like anecdotal things, and we realized that we're like severely damaged. Like, yeah, I mean, I don't need them to tell me that. Like, oh, he didn't say it for you either. And then by the end of the podcast, we're just.
And, but he, he was at Port in Scotland and came to one of my shows in Scotland, and he admitted to me after the show that he had come to tell me on behalf of the family and my mother to get my ass back to Canada and go back and take my master's degree, and that this was stupid. But luckily it was after the show, and he goes, I think I'm fine with it now. You go for it.
So if you have a bad show, you would have changed your life.
If I'd have had a bad show,
that was your Tonight Show.
Me to the airport.
That was Johnny Carson going like, he pulled you to the couch after the show.
Yeah, that's why I was asking about the name thing too, because that was crazy. So that same night as well, not only did my father tell me that he was cool with me doing everything, he asked me to keep the name. He was like, don't change your name. Don't go say it. So I got the pendulum swung.
Wow. Hey, you can go back to Whitehead.
I don't think my mom was still happy, though. So.
Oh, your mom was the one that didn't.
She wanted was like, did you tell him? He's like, he had a good set. Look, he crushed it. I don't want this any more than you do, but I mean, the man, he had jokes. He had act downs. He did crowd work.
Yeah.
I told him he could use our name. You did what? I'm sorry.
You're sleeping on the couch. Mr. Wyatt.
Oh, that's why he's been on the couch for 20 years.
So then that's pretty cool. So then you moved. So your big move was to LA then to pursue comedy.
Yeah, I really want to ask you about this. Like when you did that move and coming from Seattle, we love asking our guests, like, did you have like a group of friends that you had like security amongst and then you moved together? Because sometimes, you know, guys, they move
it's
to
like
the big
crew
city,
or
like
something
or
and that support
of you
system.
Together and like that, or did you do it on your own?
I did it on my own, man. I had nothing. You ever look back on your early comedy career and just be like, whoa, it's crazy I did that.
Yeah, no.
But delusion is our rocket fuel.
I mean, you need that because if, like, I go to the things, I mean, I basically didn't have, I had a GTI VW.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And like, so I drove that from, well, with a friend, helped me drove from Maryland to, you know, and just basically everything, all my clothes in that car, that's all I had. And then I moved here and you know, I got to somebody that I, ex-friend that I met, and I stayed with him for like a month, and then all this crazy shit that I was like, now I go back, I'm like, what the fuck was I doing? Like, I was like, it was like, and it wasn't like, even like, I mean, I know other people have gone through other stuff, but for me, the way that I grew up, that was like a big, like, thing to do, because I remember even like, I remember even the first night in the road when like the guy, I remember I was like, we're in a hotel, and then I go to the bathroom. It's like a movie. I was looking in the mirror, like crying, going like, what the fuck am I doing? Wow. Like, cause I was like, I was scared because I was like, I'm doing this, trying to do comedy, and you know, and I was like, I don't know, I was like, and then my friend's like, what's going on there?
Nothing, man.
Things are great.
Really secure in all of my decisions. And,
bro, I'm thinking about when I first moved down, because I just think about my first apartment when I was there, but I forgot about the intermediate step where, because I needed to stay at some place for a few weeks before I found my real place, you know, because it's hard.
Yeah.
So I found some temporary housing with this couple in Long Beach. So I guess I was living there for 2 or 3 weeks, something like that.
Yeah.
And they were super nice. And then I remember, you do all these firsts for your first time, especially when you're like a baby, kind of. Like, yeah. I didn't live on campus. Yeah, my mom did everything. She cooked. Yeah. She did my laundry.
Same.
So I remember doing laundry for the first time.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at this machine like it's fucking alien technology. You know what
like
I mean?
Home alone, like.
Yeah, I'm scared. I'm like 22 and I'm just terrified of the washer and dryer.
And then you cut to the other people like, are you going to use that?
Yeah.
Like,
but they're like, yeah, you can use the washer and dryer. And then I'm just like trying to figure this thing out. And I remember doing my first load of laundry and I set up my camera. It was like a BlackBerry at the time. And I sat just like cross-legged on the garage floor. And then I took a picture of my, and I sent it to my mom. Just but I remember that weird period where I'm in this new place. So adult.
Yeah.
Most people have these experiences when they go to college.
Me too. I never had that.
But I never had that either. So it was a little kind of delayed development or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I just remember when I was living in Long Beach, so I was working at Boeing, and then at night I would drive up to the Hollywood Improv and just like hang out. That's part of it. You know, you can't get up.
Yeah.
You get up when you can get up, but then outside of that, part of it is just leaving your apartment.
And to understand the world.
Understand the world and... Yeah. That was one of the
making
first
those early friends too.
Yes,
like getting into the culture.
Because I would get down and be like, oh, "I'm not getting stage time. Why am I going out if I'm not going up?" But then I had this epiphany where I just went to the Improv to hang one time, or I went to one of these places, and someone's like, oh, hey, blah, 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 you should do my... So it's out of sight, out of mind. Exactly. And sometimes just leaving your apartment, I realized, oh, that's part of it too.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't have a show.
That's our office hours.
Yes.
That's what I say. That.
Like, but I remember I still have these vivid memories of driving up the 710 to the 101, and I'm like, nobody knows who... And I'm here alone.
Yeah.
I'm in this huge city.
Yeah.
It's kind of nuts looking back on that. And I would just go with the improv. I had some friends and stuff, but you're a ghost.
Yeah.
When you're that young in your career... People are like walking through me and shit, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, same thing. I mean, for me, it was exactly the same thing. I moved here and like,
I still find this town kind of clicky. I moved here late in my career. Yeah. So I've only lived here for 5 years. But when I moved here 5 years ago, same thing. I was a bit like a ghost. Nobody knows that you have a track record or that you've come there, or that you've already had a 15-year career in a different market.
Yeah.
And I do, and I still find the place a little bit clicky sometimes. Yeah. You see strength in numbers around LA where you don't see that in other markets, really. You know, which I guess maybe because they're smaller or whatever. A lot of people are more individuals that are getting booked at clubs. You name the city or whatever. Yeah. But here, I found that. I found there's a lot of people who are just, they've got their group.
It's like high school.
Yeah.
There's so many different scenes too. There's people who get up a lot, maybe East Side or at this scene. There's so many pockets. And that's what I learned. You just kind of get in where you fit in.
That's for me, it was like, I started hanging out here and then this is the place that I felt the most welcome.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's led me to start working here and doing all this stuff. But like, it was just a matter of like, you know, going to the different places and then see which one you kind of like gravitated to. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Bottom line is just stage time.
Yeah.
Some people will come to the store when they're like so young. And if you have an in there and it works out, great. But you should be getting up.
Of course.
Like, you don't want to hang at the expense of not getting up.
Because
some people just spend all their time at the factory or in their young, hoping to get in the factory or like spend all their time at the improv, hoping to like do that. But
go other places.
Yes.
Also
get up.
Yeah. Because that's the whole. Yeah, if you don't get up, I mean, like, and it's funny because even to this day, people don't even, when the other day this person asked me, like, on Instagram, it's like, hey, how do you get up at the comedy store? Like, he wanted to, like, I guess he got up in one show before, one of those produced shows. He's like, I'm trying to get back to get, how do I do that? I was like, oh, well, you got to become a paid regular. You know, like, people don't even know all these little things, you know, like, which is why the reason of that you got to hang out in those places, you can understand the culture of like what a paid regular is. How do you get into this? You know, like,
I think some people don't even know time limits. They'll watch a comic go, do I need to all of a sudden have 15, 20 minutes? No, just start with three to five minutes.
Yeah,
and sometimes they don't even know that.
Yeah.
That's all you'll get to when you're brand new. Like,
I think it's also newer.
Because it takes a long time. That's a long 3 minutes when you're brand new. And
but it's also newer people now because I think with social media, you see it now and they go like, yes, I can do it. You know, like, I guess it's easier to see that they can do it, I guess. I don't know, because there's more
content out there
or whatever, or because of like the influencer editing thing of like, you do 30 seconds of something, so then I get a lot of views. So then they start thinking like, I can do this, replicate this on stand-up, which is like not
at all. It's interesting how stand-up is evolving and morphing into different things. There's like how we brought up or like how we consumed it and have been doing it for years. It is this live experience and doing a headlining set or even a featuring set or even a MC set.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a flow and it's almost like a play or something. It's this live experience. And now the way media is consumed on TikTok and Reels, that's almost a detriment. You kind of want like, hey, it's all editing and like GIFs coming in and shit and captions. So because you could do that, doesn't always translate to
not at all.
Like Jim Jefferies or Burr, and it's this like different live experience.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting too, because we often talk about how I don't know if like in the early days before social media, you had to start in front of a room of strangers, unless it was Jeff Dye, wasn't it? Who was like, he invited all his friends and family to his first
Seattle
ever
guy.
Gig.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And he went up in front of people he knew, like a couple hundred people that he knew, which is very rare. But for the most part, most of us, I don't know about yourself, but I just wanted to start in front of strangers that way I'm not burning any bridges and I can walk
away
from
the same way.
If I,
when I started, all strangers.
Yeah,
I
you
didn't
don't
invite
want
anybody.
Or people there.
But,
yeah.
But nowadays, I don't know if anybody does, because if you're, you know, 12, 13, you start doing social media. By the time you do your first gig at whatever 17 or 18, you get up there, you probably have
already
an audience. Or you might already have.
But that also like is detrimental because like that always cuts. You know, like if you're not good, people are going to like, they're not going to come back. And that's always it.
Well, that's true. But I guess I just feel that if they already like you from social media, they're going to give you a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Unless you're older. If they like you from social media and you're older, they might go, that's not for you. It's not for you. But if you're young and like 18, 19, and you've built a social media following, like, I'm going to try stand up now. I bet you get all the support in the world.
That's true.
That's what happens a lot with those influencers. I was going to say, so now that you're traveling a lot, like, what's your, because now you're on the road. I was gonna say, like, how do you like being on the road? Because it's like, that's a different thing from what we do, like, just being here in the city, being a, because that's the thing that when I first started doing comedy, I actually took like it wasn't a class, it was like kind of like a day thing of telling you how the industry of comedy was. And one of the things was like, do you want to be a road comic or a city comic? And I even
Wow, they make that distinction.
What's his name? It was I forget his name. He actually taught in the DC improv. He did like how
You should really teach is how to get audiences to remember your name.
But then I was like,
that's the most important.
I remember going
thing.
Like reading. I'm like, oh, I want to be a city comic. I don't want to be on the road the whole time. Yeah. Like that was even before I started doing. I was like, yeah, I don't want to be just going from you know. So now for you, like, how does it feel being on the road? And, like, how do you like traveling, you know, in terms of, like...
Question. Oh, was that... It was green and now it's red. Was it off for a sec? Or does that mean it's switching?
They go back and forth, yeah.
Oh, okay. We'll cut that out. This is the first time I've seen a camera, guys. That,
I was like, what's going on?
If it turns blue, that's when you should get concerned.
It's like... is that the fly again?
I was like you. I think I wanted to be a city comic, or I gravitate towards just like staying in town, doing spots, building my material. Traditionally, that's how I've done it. Mm-hmm. I just build here at the store, the improv, the factory, and then I refine on the road. I would do that. So I would get the hour nice and tight, but I had all the chunks that I've built in town. And then now I'm going out, and it's a little different because I'm further along in my career. I used to get a little like sadder on the road because the money wasn't great, and I got a lot of time in town.
Yeah.
And my process and my methodology is fine just staying in town and building that way.
Yeah.
But what's been cool about hitting the road this time is that like I have fans after the show, whereas before, people are just there to see comedy.
Yeah, they don't know who you are, so you got to introduce yourself.
So they're like, oh, that was great, but they have no idea.
Yeah.
Like, you're just burning an evening for them and, like, doing the job.
Yeah.
And that there's fun in that.
Yeah.
But it's a different thing when, after a show, someone's like, I've been following you since such and such. I'm so glad I got to see you. And there's this, like, connection.
Yeah.
So now you're getting to have this connection and meeting hearts that have
true
been on
fans.
Instagram.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel real.
Of course.
You just pull up your phone and it's just comments and it doesn't feel like there's a human behind there.
Yeah.
I mean, there is it, but there isn't. But then when you see a face and you talk about it, you go, oh, cool.
Imagine if it's just an actual robot. It's like,
I'm your biggest fan. I've liked all your stuff. I write LOL. I don't know if you caught it or not. It's so cool to see you just in the flesh. I've told all my robot friends about you. B932, get over here. This is the guy I've been telling you about. He's like, he's a cousin of R2D2. He didn't make it. He wasn't as cute. You know, Hollywood. You know, Halloween. I don't need to tell
and
you.
You're like,
sorry, I'm geeking out. I'm normally not like this.
You're like, we got more people. It's like, sorry, I'm taking off.
So goes like, are you done? Hey, fuckface. I was here first. Just wait your turn.
Dude, just get out of the way.
The robot's got attitude.
It just like stabs the human in the heart. Like, whoa, what the fuck? I know you're a big fan, but... You're gonna send me to jail. I'm a robot. Your human rules don't apply to me.
And then he's just cut to his training. He's like, and he's got a picture of you. Like, I'm gonna like revenge.
Yeah. So it's cool to meet
big with robots.
Yeah, it's cool to meet. It's cool to meet my robot fans. And then also, I sell tickets. I'm learning because I've only done 2 dates so far. I've done Dallas and then I did Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm.
So Detroit and then Minneapolis is coming next. But Dallas was the first kind of venture out there post pandemic, and also 3 or 4 years later from, you know, last time I kind of toured. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's different. It feels different. Like, oh, okay, yeah. I sell tickets now, and also I have fans afterwards, and the money is different.
Better, yeah.
So I feel better
doing like that.
I feel better touring now than I did in the past.
Yeah.
That's a great step. Are you at all, being on the road, are you at all like superstitious about anything? Are you one of those guys that's like, I gotta have a stage jacket, or I've gotta break in certain clothing before I record a special or do a TV appearance?
No, nothing like that. I mean, the road, I try to keep it simple. I'll wear a t-shirt or just like solid color.
Yeah.
I don't wanna have to have like...
Do you check in? Like, are you like or do you like suitcase? Do you check? Are you
carry on? Carry on.
Yeah.
No. I hate waiting at baggage claim.
It's simple. Yeah. Oh, it's a nightmare, isn't it?
Yeah, no. Sometimes I check in because of merch and stuff.
Mm.
But I prefer more, you know.
Obviously. I've got to figure out my merch is.
That's another thing to do, like when you're on the road, like, because you have to have something. I like to perform, you know.
Yes,
I don't want to become a salesman afterwards. But like, it's a thing that you do have to do because people do want to have like a remembrance of like, you know.
And I want it to make sense. I don't want to be like, hey, what can I fucking sell these rubes after the show? Like, they're big fans of mine after I'm done. Hey, does anybody have like a stick of gum or some shit that I could sell to these?
Magnet.
Yeah.
Gum.
Hey, you're
give me that computer paper. I'm gonna sell signatures.
I'm selling reams of paper after the show.
So, and then when you were like, now that you're like in Dallas, and then you went to like, what do you do during the day? Are you just like, do you go like eat, or do you go like, because sometimes I like to go like, let me like the different food that's from that town.
Uh huh.
You know, like that's kind of like the thing that I like to do if I have time, or like
ideally you're in a city where you can walk to all the stuff. It's pretty central. But then sometimes, you know, they put you up and you're in the burbs and it's not. You just kind of, am I going to get an Uber into town? Maybe. Yeah. And then also I'm in this weird purgatory where I can bring someone sometimes. Sometimes I can't. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to figure out how well am I doing in certain markets.
Exactly.
If the money's good enough, then I'll bring someone, because then I have a friend out there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Whereas right now, sometimes they're like, okay, but they want to do their own support. And so, which is great for those comics in that city to have an opportunity to get up. But then the byproduct of that is just like, you're alone walking around in this like foreign city. And the road is already tough enough. It'd be nice if you can kill some time with a friend.
Of course.
In the daytime.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's like right now, there's dates that I've been doing with Carlos. That's why it's been so cool and fun, because it's like you got somebody to go to lunch. You got somebody to go work out. You got somebody to go do stuff. You know, so it's like, it's just so much.
It can be hard to work it into the budget too. I've had these discussions with girlfriends in the past where they're like, oh, I'll come with you and then let's go out to dinner before the show. Yeah, and I'm like, no. Yeah,
you want me to break even? You want to be in the red on this?
Trying to explain to them, like, because I remember having this argument conversation with a girlfriend. She's like, but it's only twice as much. It's only twice as much because I'm here. I'm like, no. I eat Subway or I'll have fast food. You want to go out to dinner.
Yeah,
it's actually about 8 to 10 times as much.
You
babe.
Take her to
it's
the like, club to have it. Chicken tenders.
Yeah.
I'm taking you.
You have to eat the shitty free food at the comedy club.
But also, like
me.
I think also, like, well, I told that with my Brooke to my fiance, but like, please, I mean, like, I got to work here. I'm not here to vacation.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's like, even during the day, I'm preparing for the set. I'm like trying. So it's like, you know, there's different times of like different, like when I go to Vegas, it's more like a week and like, that's different, I guess. You could bring, I mean, because that's, there's more, that's easier.
I'm with you.
Yeah, and you try to say, like, let me do my job, and then we go out to dinner when I get home. We have a lovely
Or you could be on the road, like, hey, you go to, like, Hawaii or something, and you got, like, a couple of days to chill, you know, stuff like that. But, like,
I know you mean. I'll get that, too, because our job seems just so fun and party all the time. And just because we work in comedy, it doesn't mean that we're not working.
Of course.
So your mind is thinking about, okay, what tweaks?
Yeah.
And then it's hard to have vacation mode, but you're there to work.
Of course.
Yeah.
And you're also like pressuring like, hey, hopefully there's people show up. Hopefully, because, you know, you're going like, I've gotten that, you know, right now where like they give you the numbers and you're like, oh, fuck. And then you show up and it's like, oh, fuck, there's a lot of people.
Isn't that funny?
But it's kind of like, you're like the whole time, you're like, well, I guess I'm preparing to do like in front of like 30 people. And then it's like, oh, it's 200 people. Like, oh, I got to change my dang, what I was going to do now.
Oh, I guess I'll never be back here.
Yeah.
Oh, go, maybe it'll be okay.
They send you the numbers. They go, here's the numbers. And you go, oh, fuck. Hey, guys, I'm going to be in like immediately. Hey, what's up, guys? We got two shows. It's going to be fantastic. Fuck. Hey, what's up, guys?
It is very, like, I guess we do the same marketing thing that movies do. Like, in the, like when you know, like, I heard, like, you know, what, when a movie's tests good and they're going to do, they don't put that much ads. But when the movie's bad, they fucking fill that because they wanted at least the first weekend for people to go see until they find out, oh, that movie sucked. That's
what it is. Let's bait and switch them.
Get them while they don't know.
Yeah. We're almost done, but I wanted to ask you because speaking of you, like you're saying mine, because I was like you're like one of my favorite comics to watch that I like to watch and like be like, okay, I can sit down and enjoy because my thing is that you think like your brain goes other places that my brain doesn't go to. So like, how do you like, what do you like? I don't know. What's your, I don't know how to, I was going to say, what's your, are you a robot?
What? Oh no, the secret's out. I was trying to create some hypotheticals so it wouldn't draw attention upon me.
No, but like, what's your, like, I don't know, your process or like, what do you go, like, how do you think? Or is it just, because obviously I think it's a lot of natural thing. It just comes out naturally. You're like, oh, I just think like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. <Yeah. laughs> Let me think about it. Just read this. I think sometimes I'll have premises or an interesting thought. I think all comics, we just live life. And I think there's the difference between comics and civilians, because sometimes civilians will be like, oh, I don't know, I couldn't do that.
I love that, comics and civilians.
Civilians, yeah, civvies. Funny stuff happens to everybody, but I think the skill of a comic is being able to, like, recognize those thoughts and then like jot them down and foster them because average people are so busy with like other stuff.
And also make it universal so people understand it.
Understand it.
A lot of the people that, oh, I'm funny, but like they start telling a story about their friends. I'm like, who the fuck are these?
They haven't established the beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah. Like you have your comedy language and you've developed it and you've learned it and you know it very well. So something funny can happen to you and it's almost like a feeling. You don't have the words yet, but
You're like, I can use this for something.
Yeah, and then you apply, it tinkers around in your head, and then it's able to come out like funny Francisco, like your style.
Mm-hmm.
And the same is true of you, and the same is true of me. Like something will happen. I marinate on it for a bit, and then I'll think about like the words and all that. And then sometimes I'll say the joke or whatever the premise is, and it gets a laugh. And then when people are having fun and laughing, that's almost... Mm-hmm. Then it's improv, like the robot shit earlier when we're having fun.
Yeah.
Then it's kind of like an improv gear where if I just see it happen in this world, like what else would be funny?
Yeah.
So a lot of times the start of my jokes will be written, but all the fun act outs and places that it goes are things that happened organically when the room was having fun.
Got it. They got the premise or the joke, and then you can have
now
fun
I
with
get
it.
To play.
Yes, exactly.
And because it's almost like a free spin. I always call it the star in Mario Kart. Mm-hmm. You know when you hit that.
Yeah.
So when the crowd is laughing off of something, anything you do, doesn't matter.
Exactly.
It can only be upside.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to stop laughing if you do something stupid because you're riding the wave.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's a very funny term, a free spin.
It's a free spin.
Yeah, give it a shot.
Totally.
That's true.
I think like someone told me this, and like an actor told me this, where they're doing an audition and someone says, can you maybe do it more like
free
this?
Spin.
And he goes, oh, you mean like, and he'll just do it like that?
Ah, yes.
And so that's a way of doing, like getting a read in without
doing that to
read.
Yeah.
And they go, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like a free spin.
Like do it like that. No.
Oh, you mean like just for like 20 times and go, okay, I know the free spin thing you're doing. Just please.
Hey, I invented
free spin. Oh my God. You're Maggie Spin. Yes, I'm Maggie Spin. So, I'll have the premise, a joke. If I get a pop, then I'm playing in it, and then I just keep whatever works in that like free spin space.
Got it.
Yeah.
But do you go like when you have like an idea for a bit or something? Do you go like, well, that's easy, that's the obvious one, and then you go like, well, let me think of the crazier one, or does the crazy one comes right away?
Sometimes I think in front of a live audience, some of the tags that you thought would be funny that you've written before you perform them don't work. And then in front of the audience, when you get that free spin moment, you end up with tags that you never pictured happening.
You know?
I still have a couple of tags in my set that I don't understand why they're big buttons on a routine. Like, and I still deliver them because I know they bring a big laugh. But in my head, in my soul, I'm like, I don't know why you guys think that's the funniest option.
Oh, yeah.
Here.
I've gotten that too. I'm like, people, I don't know. Sometimes I go like, I don't know why people laugh at this a lot. Because it's like, it's okay, but it's not that fun. But yeah. I keep doing it. I was like, and then I don't get it. But I gotta keep doing it.
I mean, okay, I guess that's how my joke ends now.
Yeah. Does that happen with you too? You do a joke for long enough and it works, but you kind of forget why it works. You're just so far away from it. Yeah. Maybe it's a bit you wrote a year ago or a year and a half ago. I always like getting the biggest laugh from a joke that's the newest. That feels the best to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I know I'm closer to the funny.
Yes.
Like, it's still funny to me because I just wrote it recently,
exactly.
And it's like your baby, mm-hmm. And it's almost a reinforcement that you still got it.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know? Yeah. Rather than something that you wrote 2 years ago that you know always gets a huge laugh, you're kind of like, why? I forgot why this is funny.
That's always
your jokes are the best. I hate the dip after you get that 2 week, romantic period, the honeymoon period with that new joke, and it's great, and then that little dip happens, and you're like, oh, is it because I've become too confident with it?
Yeah,
did I get that little extra and that dip? And you're like, oh no, the moment's gone.
Is it as good? Because I've gotten that, and then you're like, it was not working. And then you're like, is it good?
Am I selling it differently?
Was I in a streak like those couple of weeks?
I usually always think it's a confidence thing. I always think like, oh, I'm sure of it now, and it's lost a bit of the punch. Yeah.
And there's different boxes for jokes too. You ever notice some of them are just bulletproof? They're fucking, no matter any circumstance, those are great.
You can go to
just a string bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And then some of them are so performance-based.
Yes.
And that kind of sucks sometimes because you have to remember the execution.
And the crowd, too. If you go to those clubs or shows that are like, if you perform too much, people are like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, where I feel that I'm like, and then you got to kind of like do it without someone. And then it doesn't work as well because you're not selling it or doing something. And it's like, you know, so it's like, ugh, I've gotten that.
Yeah. I love when I just have timeless, solid, those are nice load-bearing jokes. But then you have some other ones where you're like, okay, I have to have the right inflection.
Yeah,
I have to come in at it with the right speed.
Yeah.
And those are kind of like, it'd be nice to get those bulletproof.
I could not open on this one. Like, why is this one at the forefront of my mind right now? The audience isn't ready for this.
Yeah.
I need to lock it away for a second. Shit.
It's such a formula-based system. We're almost done, but I wanted to ask a quick question. Are you, when you travel, are you like, first of all, you're like a window aisle guy?
I do window because I don't leave a lot.
I like an aisle.
You like an aisle?
Because I'm like, first of all, I can pee whenever I want to.
Mm.
You know, and sometimes I'm stuck in, and then like
I just lock in and lean. And just like get.
Can you sleep on planes easy?
Oh yeah.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Are you one of those like? Bloop?
I'm amazing.
Oh, you're a robot.
I swear to God, I power down.
Really?
I can like lower my head like this, and I don't even have a neck pillow. It's probably terrible.
Really?
But I'll just fall asleep.
But you like really like get some rest?
Oh, I'm out. Yeah.
Wow. For me, it takes me a while. I mean, I can't.
You have to get first class.
Yeah.
No. Oh, guys, you just reminded me as well. I on the flight to Seattle this weekend, the guy next to me was kicking the seat in front of me because the lady was trying to put it back, and he kept shoving it up and shoving it, and they were having a little back and forth. It was ridiculous. I actually had to turn to him at one point and go, dude, what are you gaining out of this? At one point, he was sitting with his knees up against the chair because he just didn't want her to have
the battle of wits.
He didn't want her to have the 2 centimeters, but and then when I told him, he just like was staring at me, and I was like, are we going to... Am I going to be involved in one of those stories now?
You know what I mean?
The sky police are going to...
Flight?
I do. The other day this happened to me, and it reminded me of a bit that you had, I don't know if you still do it, about like the flight attendant started doing jokes. the pilot. I don't know who it was. But, you know, like, doing like... Well, you know, and like, but like, but it's so embarrassing. Like, it's like as a comic, you're going like, and people are cracking up, you're like, this is not funny. Like, you're like,
are you jealous of the attendant?
I'm not jealous. I'm going like, this is not, guys, you don't know what this is.
This is a comedy. You guys, I'm a real stand up comedian. Come to the comedy store if you want to see real comedy. You guys have business cards. I'm actually on my way to do real comedy.
He's
pretending.
He's a pilot, for God's sakes.
How good can he be? I dedicate my life. I don't pretend to fly planes. And everyone claps for me before we go into a mountain.
And also, it's like, are they laughing because it's funny, or are they just like, well, we got to make this guy happy?
I am fascinated
they
by
die,
this.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, the joke I used to have is just sort of like, you know, the Southwest flight attendants, like, it makes me, it's aggravating how easy the crowd is on a plane. I go, it's very hard to do what we do.
Yeah.
But like, a Southwest flight is give it up for anything. They'd be like, yeah, could you turn off all iPhones, Blackberries, and Blueberries? And people are like, But I am fascinated. The people who laugh, do they genuinely find it funny?
That's what I'm thinking.
Or is it...
it's a polite laugh.
Like,
is it
an ironic laugh, even.
It's... Yeah, I want to get in that mind space of the people who are truly laughing.
You know what we have
laughing.
To do? Like a flight that's like more like it's all black people. Because they, you know, they
ain't giving it up.
They're giving it up if it's not funny, or if it's crazy funny, then they're going. So that'd be funny to be like, all right, Southwest, do your thing.
Wrote this sketch for Leslie Jones. She was on SNL. So Leslie Jones was on SNL. Uh-huh. And then I always had the sketch idea, so I sent it to her. She loved it. But like, I don't think they ended up doing it. But I just thought it'd be funny if it's like a JetBlue flight or Southwest and... And then, you know, the flight attendants are like, oh, we're loading up for, you know, the plane. This is like Leslie. She's from our New York branch or whatever. She's going to be filling in. She's like, I could do the announcement. He's like, I do the announcements around here. And the guy's like, all right, guys, we're going to blah, 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 blah. And then people are like smirking a little bit. And then he's going to have Leslie do it. And then he's going to do after. And then Leslie does like Def Jam shit. And the whole plane is like, fuck. And she's like roasting the whole, like, there's some bald guy. Like, this motherfucker, he was like, you've been using the same bottle of Pert Plus for 20 years. And like, there's a black guy running up and down the aisles, you know, like just destroying the plane. And then the guy has to get back on and like follow Leslie. And he's like, you can finish. He's like, no, you wanted to do it. You can do it. He's like, oh man, and he's just like bombing on the plane. And then like a black guy has his phone up and he goes like the Apollo siren, you know? It'd be funny, the Sandman's on the flight. Yeah, but I just wanted to see like Def Jam on a plane.
Yeah, like that because to me that'll show you if they are actually laughing because it's funny or just they're just being polite.
I mean, that would be funny if it was in the sky and the pilot's like, it's too funny. Like you gotta stop. Like Leslie, like in the sky,
leave some for me.
Which, by the way, that was the plot for Soul Plane.
It was nice just to get serious right there, like, which is actually the plot for Soul Plane. I don't know if you knew that.
Buddy, you've been an amazing guest, man.
Thanks for having me.
So much
me,
for
yeah.
finding the time to come and
of
hang
course.
Out with us. We'd love to ask one last little quick question at the end, which is of our guest, which is do you have a favorite piece of travel advice that you like to hand on to people if they're hitting the road going somewhere?
Or vacation or something.
Yeah. Or vacation.
Okay. Whenever I go to LAX or one of these airports, especially LAX, the line is so fucking long for Coffee Bean or Starbucks.
Yeah.
I just go to like a different bakery. There's so many smaller places that you get a cup of coffee.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know why you would wait 2 or 3 hours for Starbucks. Just go to like Wolfgang Puck Express or one of these smaller lines.
Yeah.
Or even that little like La Brea.
Addiction's a bitch.
it's not even that good.
Brand loyalty and addiction.
Is Coffee Bean or Starbucks 3 hours line worthy?
Yeah. Is it worth it to lose your flight just to do Starbucks?
I just don't want to be in line that long. I would rather get a regular cup of coffee.
Are you part of the Admiral Lounge or like? Because I do that and that's where I get my.
Really?
And I love it. I mean, he doesn't. Uh-huh. I like all the amenities that you could add to make it. Better flying, so I go to the Admiral's Lounge and I get the breakfast and the coffee, and I'm there until you know. And I like getting in early, I like to be group early because we travel so much, it just makes it easier for me.
So, how do you do the club? Is it via a credit card? Is it points?
Yeah, via credit card.
Which one, American Express?
American Airlines, because that's what I fly the most. So, I have that one. So, that one, and it's great because it's like you can, for me, it's like. The same money that because you have to pay some membership, but like you're always getting free or, you know, every time you go. And you can hang there. If the flight's delayed, you can hang there. They're easier to move your flights around. Uh-huh. You can take showers if you want to, you know, sleep or whatever, you know, drink for free, you know, because you got beer and wine included. So it's like, it's a lot of things that you're like,
Let me put it like this whole podcast.
He's really pitching
is,
it.
Is just built around. He actually works for American Army. He's like,
oh, you've been a great.
You've been a great. You can take a shower there. they got beers, and we take the shirt off, and then it says American Airlines on it.
Well, that'd be the whole thing. Hopefully, they get sponsored by that.
We're gonna sponsor eventually.
Well, I guess another tip: get a power brick. Just put it in your backpack.
What's a power brick?
You know, your phone dies or whatever.
Oh,
just get one of those. Yeah, yeah. Stuff it in your backpack. It's a lifesaver because sometimes their power outlets are
they don't work. They don't have them, or they don't.
Or the seats don't work. Yeah. It's just nice to have your own power source because nothing's worse than landing in a new city and then
can't even get an Uber.
Yeah, you can't even get an Uber.
You have to wait for 30 minutes for
it. Yeah, just get a power brick. Store it, forget about it.
Yeah, but yeah, make sure it's not an actual brick. I don't want people to be
don't get a brick.
Like an actual a brick that says power brick. It's like, what? They told me to get it. Well, man, really thank you for coming.
Course,
I really appreciate
it.
Go watch Fahim, and it's going to be Detroit this weekend, and then you said next week.
Minneapolis after. And then the special that's on my YouTube channel. Check that out if you guys want.
That's the name?
It's called Hat Trick. Filmed it here at the Comedy Store in all three rooms, and I think it does a good job of capturing what the vibe of this place is on a regular night.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm proud of that. So just if there's anything from this podcast, please check out the YouTube special.
Thank you.
Right on.
Well, thank you guys for another episode. Remember to subscribe, comment on the podcast, share it, and follow us, and come watch us live as well.
Yeah, write in with your questions and stuff, and. I wanted to mention too, I'll be in Nova Scotia, I think, in a couple of weeks, and we're probably going to do a couple of charity shows because the East Coast got bombarded by that storm. Yeah. So keep your eyes out for that as well.
Awesome. What happened if the storm goes away?
Well, it is. It's going.
It's just
away
a normal
now.
Show.
Oh. So yeah, then it's just normal. But the damage remains, man. It's like a heartbreaking relationship.
Okay. All right.
She might leave town, but the hurt remains.
All right. Bye, hello.